Connectability Radio presents the DSTO Information Series, Major Life Transitions, held May 14, 2009. From Children's to Adult Services, moderated by Craig Shields, with panelists Paul McCormick, Ray Roebuck, and Karen Farber.
Well, let's get started and we'll bring the chairs in as we have them. I'm Craig Shields, the System Planner for Development Services Toronto, and I'll be the moderator for this session. This is the first of three sessions of the Information Fair, and this year we tried something a little different. We've organized the three sessions around major life transitions for people with developmental disabilities. So this first session is aimed at families that are experiencing the transition of a family member from sort of child to adult, or more particularly from children's services to adult services. The next session, which will start at 11:30, is focused on moving from the family home to some community alternative. And the third session is focused on the sort of transition of responsibility for care and decision making from one generation to the next. So I'm very pleased to have on our panel this morning Paul McCormick, the Director of Services for the Special Needs Team, Ray Roebuck, consultant with First Leadership Consulting, and Karen Farber, one of our access facilitators with Developmental Services Toronto. And what's going to happen is Paul's going to talk a bit about the similarities and differences between the children's system and the adult system. Ray's going to talk a bit about planning for the transition from one system to the next. And Karen's going to briefly sketch in how do you apply for services for adults in Toronto. Paul?
Thank you, Craig. Sure. If people wouldn't mind turning off their cell phones. And those who know me really well know that I have severe attention deficit disorder, and I'll want to come over and answer your phone for you.
And I should mention, those of you that are sitting down had handouts on the seats of your chairs. If you didn't get those, let's see. I'll try and get
you might go ahead. You okay, Craig? Thanks. So as Craig mentioned, my name is Paul McCormick, and I'm the director of the Special Needs Team. The Special Needs Team is a children's program here in the city that has taken responsibility for priorizing, I sort of think of highly identified, complex special needs children for residential care. So our job is to go out and assess the needs of a child, prepare them for residential placement if no other community options exist. Our real focus actually is in trying to build capacity within the children's system to ensure that young people can stay at home for as long as possible. We work closely with the adult system in terms of trying to make the adult system aware of what the children's needs are coming up or coming through. And to that end, we've implemented a process of registering young people at the age of sort of 14 with the adult world, making them aware that these are children who are in residential placement, and we believe we'll need adult services at some point, really in the not too distant future. And so we've developed sort of a fairly cooperative working relationship and have sort of built some linkages into that world. One of the things that we're very, very proud of, I think, as a system is that we've worked with major adult providers, but I think that might be overstepping a little bit, but we've worked with RENA, we've worked with Mookie Bond, we've worked with Community Living Toronto, we've worked with Christian Horizons, we've worked with Carey's Place and New Visions, Safe Haven, in an attempt to build children's capacity so that we can try to create more of a seamless access mechanism on into the adult world. It doesn't always sort of work that smoothly. I need to be really upfront about it. We still have a number of young people in our program that we hold on to even though they've reached the ages of 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. But we're committed to those young people and ensuring that the transition into adult services occurs at some point in time. What we're very, very conscious of and very aware of is that the adult world services are, or I have to use the word sort of more limited. Really what they don't have is they don't have the capacity, of course, to sort of meet the overwhelming needs coming out of the children's world and all the needs that have been met from other adults in their world, right? So not only are they dealing with all the competing pressures of the of just meeting the needs of the regular people knocking on their door, but then they've got sort of our children's system coming up and trying to get access. And of course, one of the realities that we know of is that many of our children have been pretty heavily resourced as children. I think Craig sort of did a great job and sort of gave you this little diagram that gives a really nice, quick overview of all the services, generally speaking, that are available in the children's world, with really the idea here being to, when they turn 18 or when they turn 21, you can sort of see a pretty dramatic drop-off, right? And we don't want to pretend for one second that there isn't good adult services or that there isn't adult services, but in the children's system, when you really think about it, because they've got a timeline, because they've got an age mandate, they're expected to move those young people on so they can keep sort of reinvesting their capacity back in children who are being identified. So in some ways, it actually makes sense. I'm particularly focused on those services that cost the largest amount of dollars, residential services. We know, of course, that children transition from the educational system into the adult system all the time. I'm going to leave that to my colleagues to speak a little bit more about and some of the challenges and some of the tips to make that happen. What I thought I'd do, if people were up for it, I've got some sort of transitional tips sort of for parents and care providers as to how you get children highlighted on our radar to help ensure that the transition goes as smooth as possible, recognizing that this transition is not necessarily an easy transition to make, okay? You need to find a systems navigator. This is a big, complex system. Even finding your way around the children's system can be quite complex. We know many case managers in our agencies who are at times challenged to understand how you navigate the system. So finding a good systems navigator to be your partner, your link, is an absolute key. I know that many parents want to take it on themselves. It's a big system. We go over multiple sectors. So we're not just talking about what's available in developmental services. We're talking about what might be available in education, what might be available in health, what might be available in other ministries. You need some support in understanding how those systems come together. You need some help in understanding how you move through each one of those sort of fairly large bureaucracies to get the outcome that you want. We strongly encourage people to utilize all the services available. I can't tell you how many times when we're working with families, when we turn around to them and say, what services have you tried? And they say, well, we really haven't tried that much. We've really been trying to do it on our own. And while we very much admire that, you need the support of the other service system. We need to be able to prove and demonstrate exactly what you've done, how you've tried to do it, and what were the complexities or barriers or systemic issues that you experienced. It helps us plan. It helps us to think differently. It also helps us build a case for why we need to prioritize your child or your young person or young adult on into the rest of the adult system. So to that end, I think about get on somebody's radar. Get connected to an organization. And I'm going to show you my bias here. Get connected to an organization that has adult services. So we have some organizations that are pretty much children-focused. Right. Start to figure out how you partner with other with organizations that do both. Okay? Because they'll understand what your child's needs are. They'll understand what it means to be prepared for adulthood. We run into this sort of funny expectation. And parents, you can come, and I'll be in the hallway later on. Just feel free to come and hit me, okay? Sometimes our expectations of our developmentally delayed child is different from our expectations of our, you know, average intelligence child. And sometimes they don't really understand why. We have to grow these young people up. Their needs are very, very complex. And we have to have some expectations, not only on them, but on the service system around them, that their behavior or their skills or whatever it happens to be can and will improve. We run into very few young people where we can honestly say, you know what, there's no hope here. They're not going to make any progress. I don't believe it. Of course they can. It's important that we work on this as early as possible, we stay focused on it as early as possible, and as parents and as care providers, that we hold the treatment teams or the teams that are involved to a standard to ensure that. Why? Because, to be really blunt about it, we have to sell your child, who, when they become an adult, into that odd world. And it's much, think about it, it's a pyramid. If your child is incredibly complex, the services available for them are fairly narrow. As you move down in terms of the world of complexity, all of a sudden, more opportunities become available. There's more resources available. So we work extremely hard to try to support young people in their behaviors and in their, the development of their skill set so that we can give them the most options available in the future. And parents, you need to have that expectation of all the providers on your children's teams. So. We also need you to get an appreciation that, you know, the adult system is really, I almost want to say at a breaking point, I think that might be a bit of an over-exaggeration, but the capacity is pretty limited, right? There's no point in complaining about it. Figure out how you sort of move within that system. It's one thing to be complaining and screaming from the outside. It's another thing to figure out how you become part of that adult world and help make some real movement, okay? I want to encourage you to commit your own resources. Unbelievably, and receiving services is not a right in this province for people with developmental disabilities. And so that sometimes means that if families are able to commit some of their own resources, the opportunities and options available for their children are become a little bit wider. And I think about it in terms of, I have to pay for my child's education. I have to pay for whatever. For my other children. Think about it in that context, right? We have many families who put together trust funds for their children in anticipation of utilizing those dollars when they pass on. They can be difficult conversations to have, but you need to have those conversations about how you're going to think about caring for your child as an adult when you're no longer able. So, and it's not my area of expertise, I'll admit it, but we do know that when families are able to bring some additional resources to the table, all of a sudden, sometimes organizations are able to be a little bit more creative than they normally could. We have a strong philosophy, I think, in children's services and adult services about equity to access, right? But if families are able to sort of enhance those supports, then oftentimes they'll feel better about the supports and services that they're able to wrap around their child. Be clear about your vision for your child. We want to know. We want to know what you're thinking, what your hopes are, what your dreams are for your child. It needs to be a cornerstone to treatment planning in the children's system so that we can help the planning process move on. We strongly encourage the building of support networks around your children. More often than not, we see children who come into residential programs or any programs, and then all of a sudden, all those systems and all those friends and family slowly drop off. They're not quite as involved. We think that having sort of that enriched network around a young person or an individual really holds the agencies accountable. I know that sounds a little odd, but more people involved in a child's life when they're in placement, you decrease the risk of, we know things happen in residential programs, you decrease the risk the more people that are involved. And I'd like to strongly encourage you to keep good records. You'd be surprised at how many times people will come to us and they'll say, well, my child's development is delayed and I hear you're the guys to go to, right? And it's like, you have to prove it, right? Send me a report that says that. And you'd be really surprised that how many people don't follow through. And it's not because that their child's not developmentally delayed, it's just that they don't have any reports. They haven't sort of accumulated that information over time. When we ask them to tell us, like, who have you been involved in? All of a sudden what you hear is, well, I was involved with, I can't remember. So keep good records. We need that. We need to know what the recommendations have been in the past. And you're really sort of informing us about what your child's needs are so that we can support and plan with you better and differently. Okay, last one, start early. It's never too early to start planning for your child's future. you know, so do you want to hit me now?
No.
My ceiling raised thunder. It's key. We start early. When young people are identified with us in terms of need a residential placement, we work with the community and work with the family, and we work with the young person to try to figure out what the ongoing and future needs are going to be. So even at, you know, 13 or 14 or 15, we're thinking about 21, 22, 23, and what do we need to do today to get them ready for the adult world. So, okay, I'll stop there.
Thanks, Paul. We're going to ask that you hold your questions or comments till the end. We hope about 15 minutes or maybe a little more at the end. So, Ray?
Okay. Good morning. As you heard, my name is Ray Roebuck, and as you heard, I'm a consultant. So let me tell you just two more words about that, because in one way or another, I have been working with individuals and their families and organizations for children and adults with developmental disabilities for many decades, as some people in this room can attest to, because they know we're going back, both in the community and in the provincial government, and now I consult back to the provincial government and organizations. So that's just a little bit about how I get to sit here and share some thoughts with you, and it's because of actually a very interesting project I did a couple of years ago. But before I talk about that, I'd really like to know for a minute who is in the room. So how many people in the room are parents of a person with a disability? Okay. And how many of you, take them down, how many of you have kids still in school? Good. And how many of you have kids who are in the adult system already? Okay, so the majority of you are parents of school-age children. How many of you have kids who are under 14 years of age? Okay, so a lot of you, I suspect, have kids who are coming near the end of school. Yeah, okay. All right, thank you. That's very helpful. A couple of years ago, the service... let me say one other thing before I say my few things. I think what you're going to hear from me, and I suspect what you're going to hear from Karen, will have a lot of similarities. You are going to hear a few core themes mentioned over and over again. And I want to tell you, that's okay, because they're important messages. You hear them the first time, and you think about them, and you may put them away. You hear them the second time, you start to chew on them a little bit more, and maybe by the time you hear the messages the third time, you're ready to start really digesting and thinking, what does that mean for you? What does that mean for your child? What does it mean for your family? So there's a value in repetition. And we'll probably say it from three slightly different places, from a service provider in the children's system, from someone who's worked a lot with parents, and from someone who is sitting in the adult services at the front door to that system. So we'll give you three interesting perspectives on it. So the project a couple of years ago was to help service providers speak to parents, service providers in the adult system, who were very concerned that a lot of parents of children who had turned 18, 19, 20, 21, and were leaving school, were expecting things to be there for them, expecting a day program of some type, perhaps of their choosing, expecting a residential support to be in place, and that everything would just sort of move smoothly, nicely, and the world would continue to evolve. And what the service provider said, and for some of you, I'm sure you're already understanding this, that's not how it works. Not so easily, not so readily. And parents were angry, upset, surprised, frustrated. And how do we change that? How do we change the conversation? How do we get people to begin to understand what their issues are on the adult side and what they need to start to think about as parents of young children? And now I'm going to talk about parents of children who are 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. So what we put together coming out of that project, and I brought some copies, and I'm glad to tell you that, where's Brenda? Brenda from RENA also has additional copies of this document down at their table. So you can take from here, but there's more downstairs. We wrote a guide with professionals and with parents about what do parents need to know thinking about the future. And so what I'd like to do is just tell you some of the key messages that we understood from parents of people who were adults and some of the things they faced and they wished they had known and understood better, and some of the things that as professionals they felt it was really important for parents to understand. And Peter, who's sitting over here, talk to him afterwards. Peter was in a session I did a couple of years ago, and he's organized a group of parents around this topic and has a lot of experience. So let me give you just in a few minutes, I think, the sort of key messages, and then I'd ask you to take this away and read it.
Is it on the website?
There's good information in there, and if you don't get a copy or you want to print additional pages, it is on the DSTO website under Healthful Resources and then Publications. And what you'll find are the chapters of this book actually beautifully broken out chapter by chapter. So if you only want a little bit of it, you can just print that bit, okay? So I think one of the biggest messages, which is hard to understand but important to understand, is that the children's and adult systems are different in many ways, but in one key way that makes a difference for you as parents. And that is basically the children's system, not so much on the residential side, but education. You're in a system of entitlement. In the province of Ontario, everybody is entitled to an education, right? You may not love it, you may not be happy with the teacher, you may love the school, you may love the program, but you're entitled to it. And that really is the focus of where your energies go while your kids are young. The relationship is with school and what happens there, and that's very understandable. What's important to know, as Paul has said, and Karen will say, the adult system is not a system of entitlement. You come to the front door, there are very, very limited resources, which is astounding when you think of how many billions of dollars are being spent in adult services, yet the demand far exceeds the funding that's available. So what does that mean? Hard decisions get made on the adult side about who gets access to what, right? And it means a waiting list in many, many instances. So know that that will be the reality. There are some changes going on in the system that the province has been leading, trying to deal with some of that. And I think, you know, we're hopeful that that will bring some good changes, but it's still a few years off. So you're going from entitlement to waiting and figuring out how to get there. Don't let this come upon you without thinking about it. And to say that positively, it's do some planning. Do some planning as a family. We'll call it transition planning. You can call it person-centered planning, person-directed planning. Whatever label you want to give it doesn't matter. But it's really taking time in a somewhat thoughtful way to think about what's important to you as the parent, what's important to your son or your daughter, what they're looking for, what you're looking for, where you have views in common, or perhaps where you have different views of what that future might be, and start to think about that vision, as Paul said, and what does it take to get there? What are you looking for to make that vision happen? What are you looking for from the system? What are you possibly able to contribute yourself to help make that vision happen? And I can only urge you really, really strongly based on my conversations with many parents. It may feel strange. It may feel difficult to do that. The book gives you some ideas. You might want to talk to other parents who have done some planning, or even better, come together as a group and look at how you support doing that and having these conversations in your own family. But being mindful about it, investing some energy in it, won't guarantee you a perfect outcome, but it'll guarantee you a clearer path to where you want to get there, and understanding some of the things you can do and some of the obstacles that you have to overcome to get there. So, next big message is get together with other parents. however you do that, whether you do it by coming to an organization that helps bring groups of parents together, whether you do it by contacting other parents who you meet in school, get together as a group. There is power in groups. There is strength and support that you can give to each other, which is truly invaluable. And again, Peter, if you find Peter afterwards, chat with him a little bit about some of his experiences and helping bring parents together around this topic of transition planning. And I think there are many, 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 many benefits in that, but two very concrete ones that I want to mention. One is helping people, each other, think about how to plan for the future. The second is beginning to look at if you have to create your own future in some way. If you come to the adult system and you find you're waiting and school is over and somebody has to stay home from work because you don't have a lot of other options, getting together with some other parents may give you opportunity to create your own solutions, perhaps with your own resources, perhaps with special services at home, perhaps with passport funding. There are a number of, perhaps with ODSP, there are a number of innovative ways that as a group you could look at supporting each other when you face some of those challenges in the future. Another key message is use the school system. And you, those of you who have children who are over 14 years of age probably know that under education policy in the province, when kids turn 14, their IEP, their individual education plan, is supposed to have a transition plan, right? Schools are mandated to do transition planning. Now, having said that, are there any teachers in the room? Okay, so I'll say this. Some schools do that brilliantly, and some do it less than brilliantly, right? That is just the reality. In part because there's, and this is my opinion, I think there's a tremendous amount of flexibility about how that process is supposed to take place, and there's a tremendous amount of autonomy left at the principal level. And let me tell you that the responsibility for this is at the principal level in your school. So if you don't like what's happening or your child's turned 14 and you haven't heard about a transition planning process, you can visit the teacher and then you can visit the principal. And the reason I think that it's important to know about this is because it's a conversation that's going to happen in school anyway. You might as well get in there. You should be in there and look at how you can make it a conversation that's to your entire advantage and help them. Their responsibility as a school system is to start thinking about the future. Well, let's start doing it a little more actively. And there's more information about that in this little connections guide. So my time is probably officially up. I'm good. But I guess a few things that I want to just emphasize again. Get connected. Paul said a systems navigator. Are there enough of them?
I'll talk about that.
Karen's going to talk about it. I know, because I've spoken a lot around the province, I believe strongly in systems navigators, and if you can get a hold of one to help you, more power to you. And you may not be able to. And if you can't, then I say again, get together with other parents. And even better, if you can find a parent who's three steps ahead of you on this path, someone whose kid has left school, has begun to deal with the adult system, can share with you some of their experiences, some of the things that they did well or didn't do well, and help you begin to do that. Power in the group. So get connected. Get connected with agencies, and Karen's going to talk about that as well. So perhaps I'll stop. I've got a bunch of these at the front. Let me just say two words about it. The copies that I have up here say 2006 on them. So what we've got in this book is a little bit about what person-centered planning is about, transition planning, things that as parents, and Paul mentioned this, you can begin to think about how do you build independence? How do you begin to build self-reliance? How can you as parents begin to actively think about that at home? Some tips about that. We tell you a little bit about what happens in the school system and then a little bit about what you might expect from the adult system. So, and then there are some additional resources. So the only thing I want to say about this is the major difference between this version and 2007, which are the copies that Brenda has from Rena, is that the federal announcements about the registered disability plan were just out at that time. We had very little in there. So it's mostly on the resource side. On the story side of what you need to think about to start preparing for the future, that hasn't changed in here. Okay? All right. Now I'll pass it over to voice number three, continuing on with the theme.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to talk about how to access the 30-plus agencies that are funded by the Ministry of Community and Social Services to provide service to adults with developmental disabilities and their families. What I'm referring to is the diagram with the circles. And in your bags, everyone, so no one should have to take any notes because everything's there or in the brochure that you got when you registered in your bag. This process is in place for people who are 16 and older, live in Toronto, have a confirmed or suspected developmental disability, and are first-time requesters of service from of adult services. So you aren't already connected with an adult agency. For the initial contact, you can go to any of the 30-plus agencies that are partners, and they're all listed on the back of the brochure. You can go to them to either request information or to request service. Now, some of these agencies you can go to directly for some of their services. You don't, for example, if you want crisis or respite or some specialized supports like speech behavior, you can go directly to those agencies for those services. You have, at the end of the phone call, you can options. One is to be connected directly with a lead agency, and I'm going to talk about that next. Or the other option is to receive what we call interim support. And interim support is what Paul and Ray both refer to. This is the first stage in finding your system navigator. They will help you with a number of things. One is they'll help you start to develop a personal plan. They'll connect you to community programs. They'll tell you about services. They'll help you apply for some government programs and help you fill out the applications for programs like special services at home and passport. The lead agency, at the end of this interim support visit, you are connected with the lead agency. And the lead agency is the agency that helps you while you're waiting for services. And you will be waiting for certain types of services like residential, day programs, and case management. Those are the three types of services that you need a lead agency to apply for. They have a number of responsibilities, a lead agency. They register you for those services, so they put you on the waiting lists. They bring your name, when your name is brought forward for a vacancy, they're the person who contacts you to let you know that a vacancy has become available. They keep you informed about sector-wide information, and at a minimum, what they give you is the newsletter, which is also included in your bags, and that's published twice a year in the spring and the fall. And they're also a point of contact for you should any information change, your son or daughter's information or family information. There are waiting lists, as
everybody has said.
Everyone's referred to already, yes. We have waiting lists. And this is where the lead agency helps you. They will, again, put your name forward when a vacancy becomes available. Waiting lists are a fact of life for those three programs that I mentioned, for residential, for day, which we call community participation supports, and case management. Case management, not as long a waiting list as the others. Once you get one of the services, you can have a different lead agency, because the agency, I recommend to people, go with the agency that knows your son or daughter best. If you have one or two services, pick the one that knows your son or daughter best. If you have a day program and you're waiting for a residential program, well, that day program probably knows your son or daughter best. So when the information comes out about a vacancy, they'll know to put your name forward. Now, most of these adult services, all of the adult services, start at age 18. While this process starts at 16, just to start to get you ready and waiting, because there is a wait for, again, as I've mentioned time and time again, for some of these services. So really, in a nutshell, that's the how to access the services.
I want to say one just comment. And I think, again, you've heard it in bits and pieces. It's a complicated system. It's a complicated system in the children's world. It's even more complicated, believe it or not, than the adult side. And I think we didn't say it, but we want to acknowledge. We know that sometimes it's hard enough to think about the next month, the next 6 months, never mind the next year. And we're asking you to think 6, 7, 8 years ahead. So I want to acknowledge that that is difficult. And it's much easier in many respects to, you know, to do Scarlett O'Hara. I'll think about that tomorrow, because it's not in front of me, hitting me in the face today. So we know that. But we also know that if you don't take some steps to think, you may have some real challenges when your son or daughter becomes an adult. And we all want that process to be as smooth and as effective and as helpful as possible. So I wanted to acknowledge it's not easy, and that's why getting together with other people, I think, is really important.
And I was going to say, having that contact as one of the agencies, as your lead, so to speak, if you have questions as time goes on, or if there's new things you've heard about, you have one contact they can go to. And if they can't find it for you immediately, they should be able to contact someone and get you the information that you need.
Okay, thank you. Did you want to wrap up?
No,
well,
I really
want to add on to Ray's piece, and it's... you know, it's not probably something I should be admitting to. We're not actually much different than most of you in terms of as service providers. You know, we're thinking about limited resources. We're thinking about our funding. We're thinking about using those fundings on the behalf of children or young adults. And that's why it's important to stay on our radar, because we're always thinking about tomorrow and what priorities for this month. And it's very hard sometimes to keep in mind 3 and 4 years down the road. So, like, don't assume that we're figuring out what's going to happen in 5 and 6 years' time, because, you know, we get funded fiscally. We're thinking about right now and how we're going to respond to the budgetary restraints and pressures and opportunities that exist today. So engage with us all the time. Don't feel as if, like, certainly from our perspective, and I think I speak for a lot of children's providers, is we're more than happy to stay connected with families. And if that means talking to you every week or every other week, every hour, yeah. But we're certainly very open to ongoing relationships.
We're going to have to wrap up. Unfortunately, we've got the next session coming in soon. Thank you all for coming.